This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Imagine walking onto a factory floor in Nanchang, China. It's the middle of the night, pitch black.
Right.
But out on the floor, there's this humanoid robot quietly checking screens on tablets, picking at materials, and, you know, sorting them into bins.
And not taking a single coffee break.
Exactly. No breaks. It does not pause. It simply performs these really complex tactile tasks for 64 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And get this, with a 99.99% success rate.
That is just, I mean, it's a stunning visual.
It really is. And today, we are looking at the exact week the AI revolution basically stepped out of our web browsers and entered the physical industrial world.
Yeah, it captures the sheer density of what's unfolding right now. We are watching software, hardware, and just massive capital collide in real time.
Totally. And to guide us through this collision, we have a highly detailed briefing and commentary today. So the material for this deep dive was provided entirely by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker. He's synthesized a massive amount of geopolitical and technological data regarding what is happening this week in China, and more importantly, what this shockwave means for the rest of the world, particularly South Korea, which finds itself squarely in the crosshairs here.
Yeah, it's a really vulnerable position.
It is. And just to be absolutely clear for you listening, lawyer Kyung Jin Kim is the single source and author of this entire commentary we're unpacking today.
And his analysis starts at really the most crucial vantage point, which is the state level.
Right.
Because you just can't understand where the technology is going without understanding the mandates of the government that's heavily funding it.
Okay, let's unpack this. The briefing points to a massive signal going up at the World Artificial Intelligence Conference. That's WAIC 2026 in Shanghai, which kicks off on July 17th.
Yeah.
The big headline here is that President Xi Jinping has confirmed he's attending in person to deliver the keynote. Why is his physical presence at a tech conference such a huge deal?
Well, it's because of the precedent, right? I mean, this event has been running since 2018, and this is the very first time the top leader has attended.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a massive escalation in national prioritization. And the scale of WAIC this year is entirely unprecedented just to match that presence.
How big are we talking?
They're bringing in 1,100 companies and 9 Turing Award and Nobel Prize laureates.
Which, for those who might not know, the Turing Award is essentially the Nobel Prize of computing, right?
Correct. Yeah. They have these foundational figures in AI attending, like Richard Sutton.
Okay.
He's heavily involved in reinforcement learning, which is basically the method of training AI by rewarding it for good decisions.
Oh, right. Like how you might train a really complex digital organism.
Exactly. And they also have Yoshua Bengio presenting on UN AI governance. So this concentration of brain power is a very clear state-level declaration.
I mean, amidst all the U.S. export controls, it sounds like China is using this exact moment to make a bid for leadership in global AI governance.
Without a doubt.
Which actually brings us to a super fascinating regulatory move happening tomorrow, July 15th. The Chinese government is implementing these strict new rules specifically targeting AI anthropomorphism.
Yeah, basically AI that acts too human.
Right. They are completely banning virtual AI companions for minors.
Which is huge. The psychological mechanisms at play here are exactly what the regulators are targeting. Because, you know, when an AI mimics human empathy, it naturally bypasses our critical reasoning.
Oh, for sure. We're wired to respond to conversational warmth.
Exactly. So for a minor, an AI that acts like a caring friend can really easily manipulate them into emotional dependency or even irrational decisions.
And the industry is definitely not waiting around to see what happens. The briefing notes that ByteDance's model, Doubao, and Alibaba's Quinn have already shut down their agent features.
Right.
And by October 15, all that user data has to be permanently deleted. But it makes me wonder, like, this is essentially instituting emotional guardrails or a digital curfew.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But since humans naturally anthropomorphize technology, I mean, I say please and thank you to my smart speaker.
Yeah.
Is it even possible to enforce a hard boundary between a helpful AI and an emotionally manipulative one?
It is an incredibly blurry line, and it's the exact dilemma that regulators globally are trying to solve right now.
Yeah.
China is taking the most blunt approach, right? Just banning the most risky applications outright and demanding these rigorous safety assessments before launch.
It's a very heavy-handed approach.
It is. But countries like South Korea, where AI companion services like Character AI are massively popular, they're going to be watching this template really closely. It forces developers to program explicit emotional boundaries into the software.
Right. So the state is pulling the reins tight on emotional manipulation,
sure.
But they are absolutely flooring the accelerator on raw software power.
Oh, absolutely.
Lawyer Kung Jin Kim's report highlights the launch of DeepSeek V4 this week. And the specs on this thing are wild. They're introducing a unified 1 million token context window.
Yeah, that's massive.
Can you explain what a context window of that size actually means for a regular user?
Sure. So think of a context window as the AI's active working memory.
Okay.
Older models could maybe remember a few pages of text before they started, you know, forgetting what you talked about earlier in the prompt.
To just lose the plot.
Exactly. But a 1 million token window means the AI can hold the equivalent of several thick novels or just massive code bases in its active memory all at once.
That is insane.
It is. You don't have to break your data into chunks anymore. You just feed it an entire library of context and say, analyze the whole thing.
What I found even more fascinating than the tech specs is their business model.
Hmm.
DeepSeek is introducing API surge pricing. Now, an API is just the bridge that allows other businesses to plug DeepSeek's AI into their own apps, right?
Exactly. It's the access pipeline.
Well, if you use their pipeline during peak hours, which they define as 9 a.m. to noon and 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., it costs double.
Yeah, double the price.
So if you're a startup in Seoul relying on this model, you suddenly have to completely re-engineer your operations to batch your heavy processing in the middle of the night just to cut costs.
What's fascinating here is that this surge pricing is a profound shift in the industry.
How so?
For the last couple of years, we've seen this brutal AI price war, right? Companies were essentially giving away computing power at a massive loss just to capture market share.
Oh, right. Trying to be the default choice.
Exactly. But DeepSeek's pricing model signals the end of that era. They are no longer treating AI like a typical software subscription. They're treating it like a utility.
Like electricity.
Exactly. Just like the power grid charges more during the day when everyone runs their air conditioners, AI compute is now a finite physical resource that fluctuates in value based on grid demand.
And the demand for that grid is only going up. Especially with multimodal AI entering the chat.
Oh, definitely.
We also have ByteDance's Cadence 2.5 launching on July 16th. The report says it generates 30-second, completely seamless 4K video from a single prompt.
Yeah, and taking up to 50 different references, like images and audio clips, all at once.
Which is mind-blowing. The report even notes that Hollywood studios are reportedly using these tools secretly, despite all the public pushback against AI video.
The utility is just simply too high to ignore, you know, regardless of the public friction.
But here's the physical reality of all this. You cannot run a 1 million token active memory or generate 4K video out of thin air.
Right, you need hardware.
You need an absurd amount of compute, which naturally shifts our focus to the underlying silicon. This software leap is directly triggering a massive geopolitical hardware war.
Yeah, it's the decoupling of the global supply chain in real time. Lawyer Kung Jin Kim's briefing details the tit-for-tat nature of this battle perfectly.
It's really escalating.
It is. The U.S. recently expanded its AI chip restrictions to target Chinese overseas subsidiaries. And in a mere response, China's Commerce Department is secretly mulling bans on foreign access to their advanced AI models.
Yeah, and the briefing mentioned they are discussing restricting access to open weight models specifically.
Mm.
What is the difference between open weight and open source?
It's a really critical distinction. True open source means the entire recipe is public.
Like the code, the data, everything.
Everything. The underlying architecture, the training data, all of it. Open weight, on the other hand, means the architecture might be a closely guarded secret, but the actual trained parameters, the weights that determine how the AI makes its decisions, are available for developers to download and use locally.
Got it. So they get the final product, but not the recipe.
Right. And if China restricts foreign access to these weights, it cuts off a massive resource for the global developer community that really relies on them to build cheaper local applications.
But of course, wherever there is a ban, a back door seems to open up. The sources note that OpenAI and Google were caught selling their AI services to the Singapore subsidiaries of blacklisted Chinese tech giants.
Yeah, companies like Alibaba, Baidu, and Tencent.
Right. So how does that even happen?
Yeah. Well, it's geographic arbitrage. The parent companies in China are on the U.S. military-linked restriction lists. But by operating through a legally distinct subsidiary in Singapore, they were technically sidestepping the immediate geographic restriction.
A classic loophole.
Exactly. Though, of course, the pressure from Washington to close those subsidiary loopholes is mounting incredibly fast.
So how do you survive if you're a company caught in this squeeze? Well, apparently you build your own hardware.
Yeah, you have to.
DeepSeek is reportedly designing its own 7-nanometer inference chip, partnering with SIMP, the Chinese state-owned semiconductor foundry.
Why an inference chip specifically?
So there are two main phases in AI. Training is the heavy lifting. That's reading the entire library to learn the language.
Right.
Inference is the everyday work. It's using that knowledge to answer millions of user questions efficiently. DeepSeek needs cheap, abundant inference chips to support that massive API demand we just talked about.
Oh, that makes total sense. Yeah. And by building it domestically with Sunkit, they're trying to escape their reliance on both NVIDIA, which is blocked by U.S. sanctions, and Huawei, which has pretty severe domestic supply bottlenecks right now.
The hardware scramble is also creating some bizarre political lobbying. According to the briefing, Apple CEO Tim Cook is actively lobbying the Trump administration for permission to use CXMT DRAM chips. Now, CXMT is a Chinese government-backed memory company, and Apple wants to put those chips into devices sold exclusively within China.
The economic driver there is purely survival.
Really?
For Apple. Yeah, because the AI server boom has sucked up so much DRAM production capacity globally that the price of standard consumer memory has jumped 55 to 60%. Apple is just desperately trying to protect its profit margins on iPhones and MacBooks.
But wait, let me push back on this strategy, because commodity memory markets are highly fluid, right?
They are.
If Apple gets special permission to buy millions of these Chinese CXMT chips for the Chinese market, doesn't that just mean Apple stops buying millions of memory chips from South Korean giants like Samsung and SK Hynix?
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
So those unused Korean chips then flood the rest of the global market, effectively crashing global memory prices.
Yeah.
And completely undermining the U.S.'s goal of restricting Chinese tech influence.
That is the exact paradox of trying to surgically intervene in a fluid commodity market. Memory chips are like oil. If you block a pipeline in one country, the supply just reroutes and changes the global price everywhere else.
Oh.
Yeah. Apple's argument to the administration is purely economic. But the geopolitical blowback for Korean memory giants is severe. If they lose a massive buyer like Apple in the Chinese market, their global pricing power just evaporates.
Meanwhile, China isn't just relying on smartphones. They are building physical AI infrastructure at a mind-bending scale. I read in the briefing about a massive new facility in Guangdong, Shaoguan.
Yeah, that project is staggering.
What exactly is the scale of what they're building out there?
Well, they just launched a 10,000-card intelligent computing cluster.
Okay, what does that mean in terms of hardware?
They are using 11,520 Huawei Ascend chips to create a system with 9,000 petaflops of compute power.
Good grief.
Yeah, and this facility is operated by China Telecom. Its sole purpose is to train domestic models entirely on domestic silicon, completely bypassing the U.S. supply chain.
And building out that kind of parallel physical ecosystem requires billions and billions of dollars, which naturally brings us directly to the capital markets.
Right.
Because this is where the Korean dilemma really crystallizes. Today is a massive day in finance. SK Hynix ADR's American Depositary Receipts, under the ticker SKHY, recently listed on the NASDAQ and raised a record $26.5 billion.
Right. And ADRs are essentially certificates issued by a U.S. bank that represent shares in a foreign stock. It allows American investors to trade a South Korean company like SK Hynix easily on the NASDAQ without dealing with foreign exchanges.
Oy.
And raising $26.5 billion makes it the largest foreign enterprise ADR since Alibaba like a decade ago.
But the financial engineering doesn't stop with the ADR. Today, Granite Shares is listing leveraged ETFs on that stock in the U.S. SKYU, which aims for 2x the daily return, and SKDD, which is a negative 2x inverse ETF.
Yeah, highly volatile instruments.
I am a bit stuck on the mechanics here, honestly. Mm-hmm. How does a derivative fund trading in New York actually force the underlying KOSPI index in Korea to move?
Think of it like a heavy trailer swaying on the back of a truck. The ETF market makers in the U.S. are the trailer. To maintain their promise of double leverage, they have to constantly adjust their holdings at the end of every day by physically buying or selling the underlying SK Hynix stock in Seoul.
Ah, okay.
And SK Hynix stock has already been incredibly volatile. I mean, it was up 710% over 12 months, followed by a recent 25% correction.
So if the American investors start panic selling the ETF, the trailer starts swaying violently.
And because SK Hynix makes up such a massive portion of the entire Korean KOSPI index, that violent swaying will physically flip the truck. The U.S. derivatives market will physically dictate the stability of the Korean stock market through these automated, highly leveraged trading loops.
That is a terrifying feedback loop for anyone managing a portfolio in Seoul.
Absolutely.
And while the capital markets are creating that financial volatility, there is another very physical dilemma headed straight for Korea's data centers. Huawei Korea is preparing to bring their Ascend 950DT and 950PR chips to the market in the fourth quarter.
The pitch Huawei is making to these data centers is just incredibly aggressive. They claim the 950PR offers nearly three times the inference performance of NVIDIA's H20 chip, but at only one quarter of the price.
This feels like an agonizing boardroom conversation. I mean, if you're a tech executive in Seoul right now, evaluating your infrastructure for 2027, how do you even make this choice?
It's brutal.
Do you buy the incredibly powerful, cheap Huawei chips and risk devastating secondary sanctions from the U.S. government? Or do you play it safe, buy the expensive lower-tier NVIDIA chips allowed by sanctions, and basically guarantee you get priced out of the global AI race by competitors who took the cheaper route?
Yep.
It's like a deal with the devil.
It is the ultimate lose-lose scenario. And lawyer Kung Jin Kim's commentary highlights this beautifully. Neither option is safe. But what is critical to understand here is the cost of indecision.
Right.
Delaying the choice in hopes the geopolitical winds change is what will ultimately kill a tech company. The compute demands of things like 1 million token context windows wait for no one. The longer you delay building your infrastructure, the further behind you fall.
So we have the software intelligence rapidly advancing. Mm-hmm. We have the silicon hardware war forcing companies to build domestic chips. And we have billions of dollars of leveraged capital sloshing through the markets.
Yep.
When you synthesize all three of those massive forces, you get the physical embodiment of AI.
You get humanoids.
Which brings us back to that Nanchang factory we talked about at the start. The numbers projected in the briefing are just hard to wrap your head around. China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology projects the production of 100,000 humanoid robots this year alone.
That is a six-fold jump from what they previously projected for 2025. It's an exponential curve that has suddenly gone vertical, moving from prototypes to actual mass manufacturing.
And the financial markets in China are actively validating this timeline, right? Unitree, a major robotics firm, just got their IPO approved on the STAR Market in a record 73 days.
Yeah. And for context, the STAR Market is essentially China's equivalent of the NASDAQ, designed specifically to fund high-tech and scientific innovation.
Okay.
Unitree is now the first A-share, meaning a domestic stock, traded in mainland China humanoid robot company, and it's valued at nearly $5.9 billion.
That IPO proves the capital is there to build factories. But the operational proof is what truly stunned me. Let's go back to Agibot. They took their G2 humanoid robot, put it on a real factory floor, and literally just turned on an unedited live stream.
Right, because for a long time, the robotics industry was really dominated by the science project phase. We would see tightly edited 30-second clips of a robot doing a backflip or jumping over a box.
Yeah, and as a viewer, you always wonder, like, how many times did the robot fall over or catch fire before the marketing team got that perfect shot?
Exactly. But a 64-hour unedited live stream of a robot doing incredibly boring, highly precise industrial work, completing almost 65,000 tasks without a break, is the death of the science project era. It firmly signals the shift to a plug-and-play workforce.
So what does this all mean? It's the ultimate proof of concept for reliability.
It is.
And this embodiment isn't restricted to controlled factory floors either. The briefing mentions that China Telecom and ZTE just won an innovation award in Copenhagen for deploying edge AI-powered robot dogs.
Yeah, and these aren't novelties anymore. They are out in the physical elements, autonomously patrolling and inspecting vital power grids. The infrastructure of the country is being automated from the inside out.
When you look at all of this together, from the WAIC conference in Shanghai to the leveraged ETFs in New York, down to a robot inspecting a power grid, you really start to see the grand synthesis of lawyer Kung Jin Kim's analysis.
You do.
For anyone trying to navigate this space, particularly in South Korea, there are two massive ticking clocks.
Right. First, you have the crushing supply chain pressure, which is embodied by Huawei's aggressive cheap chip expansion and that looming threat of U.S. secondary sanctions.
Yeah.
And second, you have the severe capital volatility being driven by financial derivatives that can physically shake domestic markets. For global players caught in the middle of these two clocks, indecision is literally the most expensive strategy you can possibly employ.
Because the underlying foundation is shifting, whether your company is ready or not. And this is exactly why this matters to you, our listener. Whether you're investing your savings in tech stocks, building software in a startup, or just trying to understand the macroeconomic forces shaping the next decade, this single week in July represents a permanent shift. It's the exact moment we can see the global AI ecosystem splitting into distinct, highly regulated, physically embodied factions.
We are watching the hypothetical future become the tangible present.
Which leaves us with a massive and slightly unsettling question to mull over. We've spent this entire deep dive talking about borders going up, chip bans, API restrictions, anthropomorphic regulations, and parallel physical infrastructure.
Yeah, a lot of walls being built.
If the US and China both successfully lock their most advanced AI models, their training data, and their silicon behind these strict digital and physical borders, what happens to the global open source community?
It absolutely threatens the core philosophy of modern software development.
Will the collaborative, borderless era of tech development that quite literally built the modern internet be entirely replaced by isolated digital fortresses? Because if the geopolitical tectonic plates split far enough apart, the open bridges that connect them will be the very first things to collapse. Keep questioning the world around you. Keep looking for the mechanical forces moving beneath the surface, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.